Lunch with Pippa Hudson.
And now,
Consumer Talk featuring Wendy Nola,
who is back in studio with us. Lovely to have you here in person, Wendy.
Thanks,
welcome
Pippa.
Back.
Oh, so good to be here.
And quite a lot to talk about. It's been a very, very busy consumer week. We are going to talk about some dodgy practices in the selling of used cars. We are chatting about the Bango business rescue debacle, about the Coup product recall, and so a lot, as well as hopefully some open line calls. Before we get started, though, Wendy, let's just mention what we're not going to be talking about today, because listeners might have heard our promo for this segment mentioning that we would be sharing a case of gross exploitation of waiters on the show today. Turns out that problem is potentially bigger than we thought it was. And after we started airing that promo, we heard subsequently from additional waiters who wanted to share their experience of being unfairly treated during lockdown in particular. And in fairness to the restaurants involved, we need to allow them time to respond to the complaints. And so what we've decided to do is to put that topic on hold until next week, Wednesday. And I mean, Wendy, of course, we all know that this industry
has feels
been
like
so
you're kicking them when they're down, but there's never a justification, morally or legally, to use waiters' tips to subsidize your overheads.
And that is what the complainants are saying is happening, that their tips are being half paid and the rest of the money going to pay
just
the overheads.
Just over half going to paying managers who've had to take a salary cut and that kind of thing. And that's really not okay. Tips have been abused for a very long time, but we've
dealt with it several times before.
Yes, but now with the industry being in such a bad state between the lockdowns and the alcohol bans and the insurers, very reluctant to pay out the business interruption claims for those that have valid claims.
Yeah,
it's been a really bad story, and just as they get to their knees, they get knocked down again. We know this. And much sympathy, but as you know, we can't ignore these sorts of abuses
just because times are difficult.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that can't be the way you stay afloat.
Okay, so having said that, next week we're going to have legal opinion included in the show on this as well, by the way.
Restaurant
we're hoping the Restaurant Association will join us as well. So that conversation will happen next week. And if you or if you know somebody who is going through this themselves, who might want to have their voice heard as part of this conversation, please do let us know. You are welcome to send me an email to pippah@capetalk.co.za and we can add your story into the mix. So that is one to be put on hold for next week. Let's move on to this week's first topic, Wendy, which is a sharp increase in the number of fraudsters who are putting themselves out there pretending to be reputable auctioneers who are claiming so-called bank repossessed cars, but are actually anything but.
Exactly. And that's a believable line. A lot of people have lost their cars, sadly. And if you're in the market for one, let's use that. Let's get our hands on one of those cheapy cars. So COVID lockdown restrictions have led to an unprecedented migration to online everything, including auctions, as a means of selling anything from properties and cars to office furniture and even household goods. So new companies are emerging using social media marketing to encourage buyers to bid or make offers on goods. And according to the South African Institute of Auctioneers, SIA, they're not always above board, and sometimes they're absolute, complete, out-and-out fraudsters. They're not a legitimate company at all. So SIA has, they've noted an uptick in complaints leveled at these fly-by-night operators. Coincidentally, I covered this issue on my 702 show just last week, which they weren't aware of. But their complaints file obviously tallies very neatly with what I'm seeing in my inbox.
Okay.
So a lot of sad case studies ending up there.
Really sad ones. So let's start with one of those that led you to talk about this issue.
Okay, so just last week, Lerato, that's not her real name, she wanted me to call her that. She lives in Soweto and she saw Instagram adverts for cars about to be auctioned by a company calling itself Motus Autohaus. Now, Motus is the largest automotive brand in South Africa and they do have an auction wing. So now she's sort of the credibility established there, albeit fake. And after contacting the company, she was emailed a large range of so-called repossessed cars that were being prepared for auction. She now the first red flag's about to happen. She fancied a 2015 BMW 135i Sport. I can hear Chiro snorting here if I tell him that the going price was 55,000 rand. Anyone who knows anything about cars would realize that that's
not price
possible.
Does not tally with that brand.
I saw the picture she was sent. It was orange. It's obviously taken off the net somewhere. Anyway, Lerato didn't suss out that red flag. She was told, and this is what they do, we can take it off the auction and reserve it for you. You need to pay us immediately, right now, a deposit of 20,000 rand, which she did. And then she followed that with another payment of 35,000 rand, which she thought was done now, the advertised price being 55,000. And then she was told, no, we didn't include VAT. I mean, you know, so many red flags. Can you pay another 9,000 rand?
So she did.
So that led to her total loss of 64,000 rand. Of course, the car never materialized, and she was using two cell phones to contact them, and both those numbers were promptly blocked by the fraudsters.
Oh.
And she wanted my help. I mean, what do I do? I said, listen, all I can do is ask you to let me use your case to help others.
Others because not fall victim to this.
I did phone them, actually.
Yeah.
And the last time I phoned one of them, he was very, very polite, and he said, yes, ma'am, it is a scam. I'll never forget that. This guy just said, I know. And I asked for the man that Lerato had dealt with, and no, he's busy. What do you want? And I said, you know, I'm phoning from 702, and this is about the scam you're operating. Click! So not so polite. But, yeah, I do try and engage with them. But, I mean, really, they've changed cell phone numbers like underwear, and you just, they're in the wind. I'm not a police force. I can't.
You can't police
all I can
that
do
one,
is warn.
And, yeah. Well, she, of course, you warned because she's not the only person that this has happened to. And you've done some digging with the SA Institute of Auctioneers. Wendy, what did they tell you?
They said, you know, this is happening all over the place. They're using well-known brands to inspire confidence in buyers, such as Lerato. They're taking place all over Gauteng and possibly, I think, Bloemfontein. I spoke to someone who, what luckily has happened because the Institute has been all over this and doing all they can do, which
to
is
raise
to warn,
us, yeah.
going, doing media and putting a lot of stuff on their site so that if people Google auctioneers, they should find a link to the Institute of Auctioneers, which is exactly what happened in the case of Duncan Dubison of Cape Town. And that's what saved him.
Okay, so we've had Lerato's case where unfortunately there's nothing to be done. She's paid the money and it is gone. But luckily in Duncan's case, a bit of advanced digging helped prevent that happening to him. We are hoping to speak to the auctioneers. We're just struggling to connect with the guest right now. But first, let's bring in Duncan to hear his story. Duncan Dubison of Cape Town. Thankfully, you were not a victim to the scam, but I understand it came quite close. Good afternoon and thanks for sharing your story on the show today.
Good afternoon. Yes. I got very close. It happened with me twice. The first time I was, I was on the verge about to pay the account. And then I just, got a gut feeling that something isn't right. And, then I went to go and Google the location that they gave me.
And Google Maps. Was, very good tip.
Yeah. The physical location and then on Google Maps. And I saw it was the location they gave me was next to a Ford dealership. So I decided to call the Ford dealership and ask, like, do they know of these auctioneers? And they said, no, sorry, there's no auctioneers within the, like, a 20-kilometer radius. And they had been contacted before by other people also asking this, and they said they know of a scam that is going on in the, yeah. And then the second time, I became a bit wiser. But the funny thing is, they seem very, very professional. They've got multiple people working together to form quite a good scam. So it's difficult to know because you're contacted by multiple different people: the media side, the finance, the services side of the auction site. So yeah. It's quite challenging.
Duncan, I mean, it's thank goodness you had the savvy to go and check, and well done to you for thinking of calling the neighbouring branch, Ford branch? I think that was genius. Yes. Where did you come across the advert in the first place, as a matter of interest? How did you actually discover these so-called cars?
So I enjoy just looking at different cars, because I've bought a couple and sold a couple, just as I enjoy cars, my hobby.
Okay.
And I often find myself on different car sites, We Buy Cars, I haven't seen anyone, but mostly Marketplace, Facebook Marketplace. And I've also seen a couple on Automart. I think those are few and far between. But Facebook Marketplace, I think, is the most regular where I've seen cars selling for ridiculous prices. I mean, a brand new Toyota Hilux, they're the top of the range for 55,000 to 80,000.
Oh, come on! I mean, you're missing a digit on the price. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Definitely. So and you contact the people, they'll send you numbers, and they say just contact us on this number. You call. They sound very professional, and they say you can come view the car, and then I say okay, but when? And they say well. Firstly, we just need to, it's going on auction tomorrow, whatever, and then they sell you the story. And after the first time I heard it, I believed it, and then the second time, third time, I became wise, and I just realized, like, and then I eventually went to go on Google, now different, like, or these is, because the auctioneers that I thought was legit was the Amalgamated Auto Auctioneers. Mm-hmm. And then I Googled the name, and then SAIA, the South African Institution of Auctioneers, website came up, and I was like, okay, well.
Clever.
Mm. Yeah, it seems legit. So I clicked on it, and then they gave a long list of a bunch of scams or scamming auctioneers and names that aren't registered as auctioneers through the South African Auctioneer Institute or Institution of Auctioneers. And then I contacted them, and they said yes. Then they got back to me within a few minutes and told me, no, that is a scam. So, yeah, I'm very thankful for them. Yeah, very close call. And there's so many that I can imagine their job is extremely difficult to be able to put a handle on this because, I mean, the second you squish one, two come up as well.
Yeah. Duncan, thank you very much for sharing your experience with us. And I really think that's such a good tip, Wendy, to think about actually checking the physical address they've given
I've
you.
I've often said that.
And doing that counter check.
It's the first thing I do. And, you know, with the technology, you can zoom right in and you can see what businesses are either there or next door. And phone them, and they'll tell you the same story. Oh, so many people asking about
have arrived here looking for an auction house and finding it doesn't exist. So well done to the SA Institute of Auctioneers for assisting in Duncan's case and helping alert him to the scam. Unfortunately, the guest is not answering his phone, Wendy, but we do have his input to a degree
in
writing from your pre-interview.
What a pity, because he's radio gold, Pippa. He expresses himself so colourfully and with such passion that he would have been wonderful to have on the show, and I know he was very keen, so I don't know
what's happened there, but we'll keep on trying through the headlines and come back afterwards, but I mean, what's the key takeaway here?
So Jacques sits on the board of the South African Institute of Auctioneers, and he's also with Orcor in Bloemfontein, so most people who sit on these boards are in the,
from the
industry themselves. And he said, most important, and I hadn't thought of this, I should have, but he said the first red flag is a reputable auctioneer dealing with bank assets and doing selling repossessed cars on behalf of a bank may not withdraw a car from an auction and sell it privately. He said to me, Wendy, I couldn't do that, give you a car at a luck of a price because I know you. Well, I don't know, but you know, you can't, it's too exclude that kind of abuse. So that's the first thing. If anyone says they're going to do that for you, it's a scam.
It's a scam.
And he said, also, a reputable auctioneer will allow you always to look at a car. So in Duncan's case, they said, yes, you can look. But when he actually started trying to pin them down, then it was like, no, pay the money now, pay the, you know. There is no car for you. They don't have premises for you to go and see a car. So those are the first two, but the first most important one for me is they can't pull a car out of an auction.
Okay.
On behalf of a bank. And he said it's not just consumers that we have to protect, and they're doing a sterling job at that, by all accounts. He says we have to protect the staff at auctioneers' offices because the fraudsters pretend to be legitimate auctioneers. So the victims come looking for justice at the legitimate businesses. He says, I'm with Orco in Bloemfontein, and our address, our specific address, is being used by a lot of fraudsters currently. So we have people pitching up at our offices, some making inquiries, obviously before being caught,
yeah,
and others who have paid up to 100,000 for a car and feeling very aggrieved and, you know,
taking
in some cases aggressive.
Sure.
So I said, you know, have you tried to take any action against the forces? And he said, yes, we've spoken to police, but we are not the victims. We have not been defrauded, so we can't make a case. We can't open a case.
What about the banks? I mean, somebody asking Peter in Tableview, can't, for example, the bank account that Larata, yes, paid the money into, can't,
okay,
that be traced?
So in Larata's case, it was African Bank. And when I engaged with a colleague of Jacques at the Institute of auctioneers earlier in the week, she said that Capitec Bank often comes up, and in recent weeks they've seen a few African banks coming through.
Okay.
So when I mentioned on air last week on 702, our sister station, that Larata had paid her money into an African bank account, African Bank got hold of me and said they're actually coming on the show tomorrow,
okay,
to explain their processes and explain their FICA and whatever. When I spoke to Jacques, he said, yes, the African bank thing is quite new, but Capitec, they've known for a while, comes up quite a bit. He's tried to engage with the bank, but he says he hasn't got anywhere.
That's
so that's something for me to, yeah, attempt to do, because yes, we know as consumers, when we try and go about our business, we have to go through the whole FICA thing, and it's a lot of hoops to jump through. So how are these people doing it? I do know from my involvement with the South African Fraud Prevention Service that there's a big problem with mules. So the, yeah, forces pay somebody a couple of hundred rand to open an account in their name. They transfer it on. They get paid a few hundred rand, which is a crime if you act as,
okay,
a mule. And that way the real fraudsters are
Hands clean,
yeah, away. In
okay.
Wind.
Now, there is one other victim, of course, in this, and you've already touched on it. It is the genuine businesses whose reputations are being sullied by this. And after the headlines, we'll chat about how they've responded, because Motus, in Larata's case, have had quite a bit to say to you,
they
Wendy,
have, yes,
about some checks and balances. So we continue the consumer conversation with Wendy Nola. And Wendy, as I said, just before we went to the headlines there, Larata is the victim who's lost 64,000 rand of her money in this case. But to me, Motus is also a victim, because it's their good name that is being abused, their reputation that is potentially being sullied by something that is completely out of their own hands. And I'm just interested to know if you've had any engagement with them.
I did. I last week I alerted Motus to Larata's case and the fact that the company was being impersonated by fraudsters. So the corporate affairs executive, Berenice Francis, got back to me to say that Larata's experience, as we now know, is all too common, despite the many warnings which retailers and the media provide. Unfortunately, like other retailers, we found it very hard to prevent or limit this type of criminal activity. When made aware of such websites, we contact the registered domain owner or highlight the risk on the necessary platform. She said in this case, the link is referenced to a social media platform. In both Duncan and Larata's case, they saw the adverts on Instagram.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so they're using Instagram a lot. She said these are very difficult to close down, other than messaging on the platform, which is managed by the administrator of the page and can be deleted.
Oh, come on.
It obviously does as well. Soon after we identify a potential scam, the site is closed and they've already moved on to the next one, which is what Duncan was saying.
You squish
one and another two pop up, I think is how he put it. The transition, says Berenice, the transition of consumers to online purchasing has unfortunately created new opportunities for criminals to take advantage of consumers.
But
and we see
some,
that
yeah,
so, in every sphere.
Actually, it's not only cars, yeah.
Yeah, so people are too trusting, I think, of, you know, an ass-looking website. They just take it at face value, rather than, my advice is always, assume it's a scam until your own research proves otherwise.
Okay, Motus did, though, very kindly share some tips for audience members if you are going to respond to an online car advert, Wendy. What do they say you should do?
Have a look at the URL of the website that you're interested in and check it with the actual one. So in other words, you go onto Motus and you'll see a few digits that are...
might be different.
In every case. And she says, legal operators conform to responsible consumer practices and allow for reasonable time periods between making a purchase decision and placing a deposit or making a payment. So when you're buying a high-ticket item such as a car, be very, very suspicious if the seller pressures you into making a payment within a limited time. In other words, so the urgency. That's probably the number one red flag in any of these scams is urgency. If they don't give you a moment to breathe, if they're pestering you, asking questions, and they're just pestering you to pay a deposit or the full amount.
Be very wary.
And, you know, that, and telling you you're going to lose out on this great deal and they're doing you a favor and all that kind of thing. But unfortunately, we now, the consumers, and the psychology is at play. Now your common sense has been drowned by your eagerness to get this bargain.
The good deal, yeah.
And the fraudsters know that, and they have so skilled and experienced at exploiting that. Also important, Berenice says, anyone buying a vehicle will need to be taken through a FICA onboarding and verification process, as bona fide car dealers are not allowed to just accept cash into their bank account without understanding the source of the funds and the client who provided them. Ooh. So all these rules and regulations, you have to know them to know when they're not being followed.
Mm.
An auctioneer cannot pull a car out of an auction and offer it to you privately, and you don't just get to throw your money into someone's account, a car dealer. They need to follow due process. That takes time and a few hoops. And so if someone's circumventing all of that, the only thing they're really interested in, making sure you've got the right bank account number and that you're going to put money into it.
Gigantic red flag.
Please move on.
Okay.
So
one last thing. The Institute, as we mentioned, has been very helpful here in doing what they can to raise awareness of these scams. It's worth visiting their website if you want to check if somebody is a bona fide auctioneer. It is auctioneering.co.za, www.auctioneering.co.za. Back after this short break, talking about the Coup product recall and the Mango Airlines debacle, as well as taking your open line calls on 021-446-0567.
Consumer Talk. Open line. Call 021-446-0567.
We're back with consumer journalist Wendy Nola. And Wendy, I think by now most of our listeners, if not all of them, are aware of the massive Tiger Brands recall. It's been mentioned on air several times. It's been covered in our news reports. We've mentioned it on this show.
And with good reason.
Yeah, it's a big one. 26 brands of canned vegetables affected. Most of them are Coup products. And it covers 2 years of production, which is a really long time span, Wendy.
I hope to explain a little bit about that in a bit, but... I think that gave people pause for thought in terms of how worried should we be.
Yeah.
How long was this not picked up? So anyway, the short story is that, certainly in terms of scale, Tiger Brands plant in Boksburg produces 1 million cans a day. So
a
you
day.
Can imagine, look at a recall covering 2 years. What went wrong? Well, the culprit was a defective seal on the can's seam. These cans, come fully formed without the lid to the food manufacturer. They full heat the food. It's the heating process that sterilizes. And so you can have food with a long shelf life, 2 to 3 years on a cupboard shelf rather than a fridge. Okay. So that's the beauty of canned products when everything goes right. But, they detected a small leak, which creates the risk of microbial contamination and what Tiger Brands terms a low probability of illness and injury if the contaminated product is consumed. The big worry with such contamination is botulism, and we'll get there in a bit. The cost to Tiger Brands of this enormous recall is between 500 million and 650 million, depending on whether or not they have to destroy what is 56 million cans. Let's not forget.
56
million cans. They wouldn't tell me how many they sold of this, of the problem batch, but, they said they're expecting 20 million to come back. And when I interviewed the CEO, Noel Doyle, on Monday morning, he said they had quarantined 36 million cans as an in-house that never went out to trade. So we're talking at least 56 million cans. I'm always worried about food waste in a country as food insecure as ours is. And he said they're going to do all they can not to have to incinerate. But to do that, to not incinerate them, they would have to come up with some kind of scientific way of ascertaining whether each can is viable or not. In other words, if the seal has been compromised or not. And at this point, they don't have that. So
they don't have that.
That's
okay.
The food waste angle. I only this morning got to speak to the joint CEO of the Germiston-based company called Golden Era. They have a canning subsidiary. Her name is Asha Chita. Mm-hmm. She's third generation in the company. It was started by her grandfather in the 40s.
Gosh.
They have a very good track record. She assured me, because the big worry was how many other food companies did they supply with this batch of cans, of several batches of cans, and she said none. They've it's too technical to go into here, but they have a means of established. They have established what the root cause is and the factors that lead to it, and they can say for sure that those problem batches only went exclusively to Tiger Brands. So we're not going to have any. We should not have any more recalls, from what I know at this point, from any other companies. It's equal in magnitude, to the Enterprise Poloni recall of 2018, which was in response to the deadly listeriosis outbreak. And there, I mean, they had a causal link. They had, from those kids in the creche in Soweto, they stool the same.
Bacteria and stuff was found.
The ST26 strain of listeria was found in the children, in the polony that they had consumed, and in the factory where it came from. So there was a very strong link, and people were, as we know, we're not going to rehash that story. Tiger Brands was accused of underreacting for a while there, and I think
which is possibly why
industry sources
so strongly,
are saying that they're possibly overreacting. Why 2 years? They found three batches, and then they found another batch. All between manufactured between, I think, February and April of this year.
Of this year?
Yes.
Okay.
The reason it's gone back 2 years is the seventh batch that was found by Tiger Brands, there were only a few found. It was a batch of a million. Some of that had gone out to trade. So then they went back to Golden Era Cans and said, can you hand on heart say that none of the cans that you've supplied us since the beginning of this contract in May 2019 can you tell us, hand on heart, that all of those are fine? And no manufacturer can do that. There's nothing. There's such thing as defect-free. It's close to impossible.
Yeah.
So they obviously said no, and that's why it goes back that far.
But so it goes back as long as their relationship exists with the company.
Yes, but bear in mind, they have seen no spike in complaints around this. They don't know of one where someone said the can was leaking.
Okay.
They don't know that even – they have no evidence that any leaking cans actually made it onto a shelf. There's been no report. So – please keep that in mind. They then put 280 of these cans on what they call a stress test in a truck from Gauteng to the Western Cape, and they were handled when they were here. Then they tested them. Two out of 287,000 cans had signs of leakage.
Okay.
So I really want to say, yes, the recall had to happen. I don't know whether going back 2 years, that could be debatable, but this is not a cause for consumer panic. This is not a listeriosis situation.
Yeah.
No. So by all means, if you find the products in your cupboard, take them back. I'm having reports, unfortunately, that some shop managers are demanding receipts when Tiger Brands has said that's not necessary. I mean, how would you have a receipt for baked beans
that might have been there 6 months? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think most of these products would have been consumed. They produce a million cans a day.
That tells you that people are eating
a lot of
their beans.
And they're only expecting 20 million cans back from a 2-year recall.
Do the maths,
So do the maths. There's been no – botulism is not something that you can not realize you've had.
Okay.
It is, you know, the symptoms are difficulty swallowing or speaking, a dry mouth, facial weakness on both sides of the face, blurred or double vision, drooping eyelids, trouble breathing, nausea, vomiting, abdominal cramps, paralysis. And if not treated at all, 40 to 50% of people will die. I mean, it's dire, but it's not very common in canned goods. It's more in home canned goods and in, I think, bottled goods. And that,
home bottled, yes.
That came to me from our well-known, world-renowned microbiologist, Professor Lucia Annelich, who's been on this show a few times.
So she's not worried that we're going to see a massive spike in botulism cases.
No, she's not at all. She's also emphasized, she's spelled out what botulism is about and how you must seek help immediately if it happens, but She said commercially canned foods are among the safest for human consumption. Most incidents of foodborne botulism, as I've said, occur from homemade canned or bottled goods. On very rare occasions, we see it in commercial canning. On very rare occasions, problems occur. She's not saying
that, we see botulism. Yeah. Problems occur, but it is generally a very safe.
The organism is found in soil. So there was a case several years ago where children found canned goods dumped in a landfill, and then you can imagine there's sand involved, and they got ill. But in normal course of events, there has to be the presence of that organism to be able to find its way through its label. Let's not forget, into this tiny little hole. So Mitaka brands themselves have said it's a tiny, tiny, tiny risk, but given what they've gone through, they are not prepared to take even the tiniest risks.
I can understand that. Yeah. I mean, the reputational beating that they took over the listeriosis, and rightly so in perspective, versus now going, okay, well, we've got to do the right thing and be seen to do the right thing very publicly and rather overreact than underreact.
And take a financial hit.
Okay.
So that's
just to recap for our listeners, if you do have one of those, it's a long list of different mainly Koo baked beans products in their different iterations and flavors. There are a couple of sweet corn and veggie products as well. All of the information is on the Tiger Brands website and the Koo website. If you want to double check, it's items produced between the 1st of May 2019 and the 5th of May 2021. And if you have got one of those in your cupboard, you are allowed to take it back to your supermarket and ask them to refund you. No questions asked. So if that's not happening, then you give us a call and let Wendy know, please. But thanks very much for the update there. Wendy, sadly, the next update is on a story that is too familiar. And the concept of mango has gone from being a sweet summer fruit, Wendy, to something that leaves a very bad taste in the mouth for many consumers. It was April, May, I think, we were chatting when they were grounded because suppliers hadn't been paid.
Yes.
And it left a very long list of unhappy customers in its wake, and that line got a whole lot bigger.
We were issued refunds. I had a case recently where somebody wanted to use the refund, but they said it was valid only for 3 months. I took it up and I said, according to Michal Tempashlele, who's our Consumer Goods and Services Ombud, that has to be, in these cases, it has to be valid for 3 years.
Yes, yeah.
Anyway, they conceded and made it valid for 12 months, which is still not. So third of the way there, but at least the woman was then able to use her voucher. So.
Just recap for us what happened earlier this week.
So I heard about this. I had someone staying with me from Durban and went to the airport. She and her daughter had FlySafe ferry tickets. There were only two flights out of the airport, so quiet. One was that one and the other one was a mango flight. It's 10:15. And she phoned me and said, Wend, I've got a story for you. There's no one manning the mango check-in counters. There's this long queue of people, scores of people, and they just don't know what's going on. I spoke to Michelle Halabi, she has a family of five. They left Durban Sunday before last. They lived very near that chemical factory that went up in the riots, and the toxic chemical fumes, they couldn't stomach it. So they flew down here on a one-way ticket. Anyway, the point of the story is that they had, they paid 8,000 rand for those tickets. The one-way tickets for the family of
to get home again.
Okay. And so they're in the queue, not knowing what's going on. Their babies. There was even a dog. The owner had sedated this poor thing because check in with your dog, and then mango transports them in the hold. So you have to sedate them. It was the whole gamut, and not a single mango representative. And what I really wanted to talk to Michelle about, which I think is the problem here, is the timing of it. So they got up early. The text. Well, let's hear her story.
Michelle is with us on the line. Michelle, thank you very much for being willing to share your story with us on the show. Welcome to Cape Talk.
Thank you very much.
So briefly, tell us what happened. You arrived at the airport to take a flight thinking you were supposed to be going home to get the kids back in time for school. And what did you find?
Yes, they were supposed to start in-person school today. We woke up at 5:30, got to the airport, dropped the rental vehicle off, filled up the car, all waiting in this long queue, and everyone was, sort of chatting about there's no one at the desk. So we thought, well, it's early morning. I think we were there at 8:00. And then the gentleman in the front, one of the passengers, came past and he says, well, I've just checked on their website and all flights are grounded. And we just said, it can't be true. Mm-hmm. I said to my husband, well, so everyone's just standing there, like looking at each other. And it was a gentleman behind me with his dog. I've got three kids. So it was just a disaster, to be honest. And when we found out that it was true, and then we got an SMS at 8:53 a.m., the flight was supposed to leave at 10:15. It just said, sorry, you know, you can't fly. There are no flights. So we rushed over to the flight staff desk for the 10 o'clock flight, but everything was full.
Yoy.
And today.
So as we speak, are you still in Cape Town, Michelle?
Yes.
Yes, we had to come back and go. Well, our vehicle luckily wasn't handed in yet. They hadn't changed all the papers. So we got back in the vehicle. We looked at the flights there. There were no flights on SAFAir. We looked at Airlink. We thought about driving home, but with three kids and one, the youngest is two, I thought 18 hours in a car. Yeah, it's just not possible. So it's just been a bit of a disaster, to be honest. So we managed the 6 a.m. flight was something with SAFAir tomorrow. So there was nothing left today. Was an obscene amount of money. And then there was a 10:15 flight, also fully booked, 6 a.m. flight, fully booked. So we managed to get on the 3:45 tomorrow.
So you will get home tomorrow afternoon, thank goodness. But what an absolutely, hopefully, touch wood. Yeah, let's not tempt fate in current circumstances.
Plus, SAFAir has put extra flights on to accommodate people who have been stranded by Manga, because they're not flying as we speak.
But I mean, Michelle, besides the obvious huge inconvenience and of your flight being cancelled, the lack of communication around it. I mean, an SMS an hour and a half before you're supposed to take off.
Yeah, an hour and 15 minutes before. It's ludicrous. I mean, I then called my mom and she said, oh no, there were rumors. It was on the news. I said, no, we didn't see anything, because we always watch the news after all the looting just to keep
track of what you were going home to. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we had no clue. They could have sent us an email. The email came after the SMS and just said, thanks for your patience.
And you're going to get a voucher. Have they given you any information about the voucher, Michelle, since?
No.
Wow. Mm-mm. Okay.
No, and then there were talks that they 6 month vouchers, but I mean,
if they don't fly
again, how's the voucher going to help me?
And would you ever trust the brand again after this experience? Yeah.
We didn't have the funds to now book another ticket.
What then? Yeah. Interestingly, about the timing, and this is my issue. So when you book a Manga flight, when they issue the tickets, they say, we recommend customers check in at least 1.5 hours before departure. That's when their check-in counters open. So in the case of the 10:15 flight, Manga flight out of Cape Town yesterday, check-in counters were supposed to open at 8:45. And it was just more than an hour later that the SMS came through for those people to say the flights are suspended. Please stay calm and be patient, kind of thing. I mean, it is just, and they didn't send anyone to the airport. Obviously, that person should have been two people. They would have come in for a bit of flack, but that's just a cowardly, awful thing to do.
Customer service to send a front-facing, actual person.
I think that's unforgivable.
To stand there and communicate with
the customers. What had happened was the air traffic control guys, that organization, they owe them something like $57 million or something, and they just said, well, you can't fly if you don't have air traffic control services. Yeah,
sure. Okay.
So that's where we sit now. Thank you so much, Michelle, for sharing your story. I wanted someone to give us a sense of what was going on in that queue.
I'm so sorry that you went through that, Michelle, and I'm really glad that you have managed to get a flight home and a safe trip home to you and the rest of the family and the kids back to school. I mean, the knock-on impact, Wendy, we've spoken before about, you know, the opportunity cost and the business meetings people are missing. And, here we go.
Kids missing 2 days.
Kids have already lost so much school. Do they really need to miss additional days like this? Okay, so that's what we know. So Manga grounded for now.
Until further notice, yes.
Okay.
They've gone into business rescue. Of course, it happened the day before they announced it. Well, that they are going into business rescue, the acting CEO said that. So that is that development. But it didn't necessarily follow. I don't think the conclusion could have been drawn, well, then their flights aren't flying from tomorrow. That's not how business rescue necessarily works.
Yeah. Okay. So another absolutely epic fail on the communication. Wendy, I think important to reflect this and respond to it. Wendy Lee's message saying, I was at ShopRite in Southfield this morning and they still had their Koo products on the shelves. It's not all Koo products. Yes. And it may well be that the ones they've got on the shelf, Wendy,
not the affected batch.
Were not from that batch.
Can't possibly be that there are no Tiger Brands products on the shelf anymore because of this. It's a very specific recall, and I'm pretty sure if you look at we're now sitting in almost August, the cutoff was early May.
Yes.
So it's already
June, July,
3 months.
Maybe 3 months. Yeah.
The bulk of the recalled stock would have been sold by now, as evidenced by the fact that they produce 1 million cans a day. It's a 2 year recall, and they're only expecting 20 million cans back. So that'll tell you. So
most are of long it's gone and long consumed.
Yeah, and no one got ill. Well, I'm pretty sure. Botulism is not a notifiable disease, but it's certainly an adverse effect that would get through to the company.
Yeah.
If it was happening on some kind of scale. So.
Okay, so thanks for that. And then Rita says, we had three of the Koo baked beans from the batch involved. We now only have two, as we've already finished the other one. We're all fine. The other two cans look fine. Do we need
to
return
them? That's the thing.
Them?
I don't want to say no, but I mean, we have a situation of a can that's already been put through the stress test of transport and handling and all the rest. If your can doesn't have signs of leakage now, very, very, very high chance, given the occurrence. I mean, in their own test, it was 287,000.
Yeah.
So it's most likely that it's fine, but I'm not going to sit here as a consumer journalist and say ignore a recall.
Yeah.
So, you ultimately have to make the decision,
Rita, but you have the right to take those cans back to your supermarket.
And the
for
refund is the current price because it's too complicated for them to work out what you would have paid maybe.
And who knows when? I don't know when I bought a particular can in my
cans
cupboard,
have a 2 to 3 year stated shelf life, but as we know, you can, if the can looks fine, you can pretty much
way past that. Okay, so you have the right to take it back, Rita. It's up to you to decide whether you want to exercise that right or not, but you should be refunded at the current going rate of that can in that store.
And you don't need a receipt.
And you don't need a receipt to do that. Wendy, thank you as always for the cases you take up on our listeners' behalf. A lot of ground covered today. And look forward to the conversation about, not looking forward to, but I'm interested to hear your feedback on the waiter exploitation topic next week.
Yep.